Hey everyone, I've got a really special episode for all today. To celebrate Armed Forces Week, I was fortunate enough to join Erica Nardini, the CEO of Barstool Sports and Barstool Zero Blog 30, and learn to speak to the members of our military about the importance of mentorship and learning to love what you do. You're also going to get to listen to a special conversation with the Zero Blog 30 team and some valuable Q&A. Don't forget, register this Friday by texting me, 949-298-2905, for our free training, or email me for past trainings and guides at david@dmeltzer.com. Look forward to hearing from everyone. This is Dave Meltzer, Entrepreneurs the Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
This is the Professional Mindset Playbook. It's Monday. We're kicking off an amazing first day of Armed Forces Week. And as you can see, we have an absolutely loaded panel for you. So you got the crew of ZBT here. They're going to be joining us for some Q&A and a little discussion a little bit later on. But we're going to get started first with the wonderful, amazing Erica Nardini. She's the CEO of Barstool Sports. She's the host of Token CEO podcast, and I like to call her the chief cool person in charge of an absolutely amazing place that we call Barstool Sports. And then, of course, the famous David Meltzer, three times best-selling author. He's also the host of my favorite podcast, The Playbook, top keynote speaker. And you guys have heard me say this before. He's my friend. He's my mentor. And he is absolutely a human good advice factory. So questions, make sure you ask him. The questions are going to be great. The answers will be even better. And to kick this off, I just really want to talk about why we got this group together. So we're going to talk about positive workplace culture. We're going to talk about inspiring people to love what they do. And this is rare, right? So I got to see behind the scenes at Barstool Sports, and I've seen Erica in action, and it blew me away how every single person that I came in contact with at Barstool Sports absolutely loved what they were doing. And the same is true with David and his team. Every time I get a chance to interact with anyone that is on the team, David Meltzer, everyone is inspired. Everyone loves what they do. And we all know that when we go around to everybody's workplace, it's everyone doesn't always love what they do. So let's take this opportunity to hear from these experts. I'm going to drop off so that you can have unfiltered access to both Erica and David. And remember, listen in, ask your questions, and let's get this started. Dave and Erica, it's all you.
All right. Well, Erica, I'm going to start with one question to start the conversation. Is it true you donated $250,000 to speak with me today?
Are you the commissioner of the NFL?
Not yet, but you would love it if I was. I'd tell you that right now. And so would I. but no, to that end, right? I think that's the kind of stuff that makes Barstool so much fun to work at. It's the stuff that makes working for this team here so much fun, is that we don't take ourselves seriously. And I was blessed last week to talk to Deepak Chopra, and that was his number one piece of advice. And I actually thought of you because you're so brilliant. You're so much fun. You're a great leader, but you really live by rule number six as far as teamwork goes. You don't take yourself so seriously, and you allow things and people to make mistakes to happen. You know, what is that mindset as a leader to be that patient?
You know, I think just listening to you and Ty, like, I love what I do. I feel so grateful to be where I'm at. I'm so happy. I just feel very grateful for it. And I think, you know, there's that expression of like, work shouldn't feel like work, or that you'll have better, you'll have the actual phrase. But I think that one thing that's really special about Barstool is no one takes themselves too seriously. No one's trying to be something that they're not. In fact, like, we're the polar opposite of that. And I think a lot of times what happens in big organizations is you feel like you're afraid, or you're not confident, or your ambition and where you are aren't necessarily in sync. And so you try to be something that you're not. And I think that that's really empty. Like, I think it's just a really crappy way to move forward. And we're really fortunate, but we feel really strongly about it, is that that's just not the type of culture that we have. And that's certainly not the type of person I am, or anyone from Barstool is. and we don't take ourselves too seriously. And, you know, we like to make the most of really fun, weird moments. And, you know, I think we do a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, really good job. I think to the context of loving what you do, we both have jobs that people perceive as, oh my gosh, I dream of being Erica. That'd be amazing to run Barstool. Or the jobs that I've gotten to do in my career, people have come up and say, oh my God, it's my dream job. And at a young age, when I had dream jobs, I kept on thinking, especially when I represented people that have dream jobs, if you only knew what percentage of the job people don't love to do. And I made it a goal of mine as a culture to help people learn to love the percentage of things that you don't love, and to realize that whether you're, you know, in the military, there's so many things that you love about being in the military, and then there's a certain percentage that you don't love. Why not practice learning to love what you do? You obviously are one of those people. Your job sucks sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're responsible for a lot of people. Anybody that's in charge of overhead employees, I promise you, cannot love 100% of what they do. What are some of the things mindset wise that you utilize to turn that mental corner and say, gosh, I'm going to learn to love this part, even though, you know, nobody should.
When I was at Yahoo, I got a really good piece of advice. The head of Yahoo made a matrix for me, and the matrix had four boxes. And box one was things that you love and are very good at. And box number two was just things that you're good at. And box number three was things that you're good at, but you don't like doing. And then box number four was things that you hate. And basically it was to think about your day or think about your job or think about your career. And like, obviously getting to spend as much time in the box of things that you love and you're good at, and working on the things that you either hate and aren't good at, or you just hate to do. So I try to live by that a little bit. Like, I always want to make time for the things that I love and that I find really fulfilling, and I feel like I can make a good difference. I also spend an inordinate amount of time with lawyers. I talk to lawyers more than I talk to any other type of people on the planet, and it sucks.
You still have your hair?
I mean, I just want to shoot myself. But that's like part of the gig, because talking to a lawyer either means you're trying to protect yourself from something, you're trying to initiate something, you're trying to go after something. And it's honestly just like a necessary evil in getting things done. And I like to get things done. So, you know, I kind of just try to make sure that for every job that we have, or everything that I'm trying to do, or anyone who works for me is trying to do, is like, yeah, everybody has taxes. Like, there's things you have to do to make the thing go. And you may not love doing those things. You may not be particularly good at them. I think one important thing is like, how do you get better at things that you aren't necessarily great at? And then how do you make sure that you always have time to do things you love to do? I worked at Microsoft, and Microsoft was very big on working on things you're not good at. Like, you would always rotate to divisions or roles that you were not good at. And I didn't really like that, because I was like, why would I want to be doing something I don't like to do? But it was good for skill development in terms of like, yeah, I hate going through spreadsheet after spreadsheet on finances, but it's important for the business, or it's important for my job. So I need to learn how to do that. So that's kind of how I think about it.
That's awesome. And, you know, I love when people like you bring up areas of mentorship from all these different companies that you work with, because I think one of the most puzzling questions that I get a lot is about mentorship. People actually ask me, like, where do you find a mentor, or what should I look for in a mentor? And I always let them know, look, I always have three mentors, you know, people that sit in the situation that I want to be in. And, you know, Erica is actually one of my mentors. When I met her, I saw some capabilities that I need as a leader, and have mirrored and watched and asked a few questions during these, you know, intentionally frequent interviews and contact that I get of her, and which is really nice. How important, though, is mentorship? And two, can you give some advice on how people can find a mentor and what they should be looking for?
Yeah, I'm kind of controversial on mentorship, because I don't think that mentorship, just like anything else, I don't think it's something that you can force. I don't think it's it has to be formal. I don't think there's like this acknowledgement process like dating where like, are we exclusive? Like, are you my mentor? Like, I don't think it works that way, or at least it doesn't work that way for me. I think there is stuff to be learned from everybody. Everyone can be a mentor. Everyone has something to share. And I think watching people and studying them and getting close to them and spending time with them and asking questions of them, like you ask 1,000 questions, David. Like, I'm sure you're an incredible mentor because you ask so many questions of, you're like a sponge. You ask questions of other people. So I think you can, mentorship happens like in so many different ways, and mentorship can happen, you know, mentorship can exist from people who are older or more experienced than you, or younger and more creative than you, or come from a different background or have different perspective. And personally for me, I'm like, I just am trying to listen to what everybody brings to the table and how can I learn something from that and be better for knowing it. And that, so I think that there should be no barrier of entry to having a mentor, because someone can be your mentor and they may not even know that they're your mentor.
Yeah. And then looking for opportunity and options is another part of your culture. You know, ever since I met Dave Portnoy and I met you and Large and Willie, everybody really shares the same type of opportunistic type of creativity. Which obviously during these times is essential. And I think you guys are thriving through a time where if someone's going to talk about, you know, your company, you would have put money on the fact that it would have folded by now, right? Just it's sitting in the wrong space according to everyone else. But some of the things that you're doing are just explosive, and you're at the top of the game in so many different areas of content because you have that perspective. What is it about the culture that allows you to have that opportunistic and option forward-looking perspective instead of, you know, not to throw ESPN under the bus, but I can't believe what they're putting up. Like, I honestly, I've been in this business so long and I'm like, okay, you're lucky you got the Jordan series, but why wouldn't you like actually be creative? You're Disney, for gosh sakes. You created creativity and Barstool's kicking your ass. Excuse my language.
This
military thing, I get a little worried they're going to come to my door and knock or something.
I haven't sworn once in this podcast, in this thing, and I just...
I beat you to it.
That's because I like Ty so much that I will not... I'm actually not going to swear in this whole thing, which I'm very excited.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's going to be a big day.
Sorry, Ty.
I bet on our company like 10 times out of 10. Like, we are worth betting on... because we're so hungry and we just don't see barriers. We just don't, you know, I think big companies like an ESPN or Turner, you have a lot of people, not everybody's like into the mission. You know what I mean? Like, everyone here is into the mission of their show or their personality or the video series they're working on, or really what Barstool stands for. And I think a lot of that starts with Dave himself. Like, when Dave Portnoy started Barstool, he had nothing. There was no one coming to help Barstool Sports ever, period. For 11 years, the Chernin Group showed up. I think a lot of people wanted to exploit Dave of like, hey, I'll give you some money and then I'll get a big return. And you know, it wasn't until 4 years ago that we started working with other companies. So there were, you know, there was a decade where this company only had itself, and we've since then, that's the pirate ship, and we still make this feel like a pirate ship, so that the people who really succeed at Barstool are people who are extremely resilient and extremely self-reliant. And I think if you're resilient and self-reliant, you can pretty much make anything happen. Now, you can't turn from a lion to a zebra, and you can't be something that you're not. But if you have those two, if you have those two skills, or you believe in those two things, nothing can stop you, because you'll just be relentless in what you're trying to do. And that's really, at the end of the day, like, we just care more. You know, Dave was going to win, you know, Dave just won, you know, an auction to watch Monday Night Football with Roger Goodell. Not because someone told him.
First of all, you don't win auctions. This is where I get told my wife. You don't win auctions. He paid a ton of money so he could do it. I hate that. My wife's like, we won this piece of art. I'm like, we didn't win it. That was $1,000 I had to work for.
Totally. That's like when you shop at a sale and you have some explaining to do. And it's like, how much money did you save today?
Right.
But
sorry,
anyway,
I had to interrupt.
No. That's cool. But, you know, I think the cool thing about us is that we're very trusting. Like, we'll talk to the ZBT crew and, like, we trust them to talk about whatever it is they want to talk about, go wherever it is they want to go, cover whatever it is that they want to cover. We're not afraid of letting them be them. And that's why this works, because we know they're resilient. We know they're self-reliant. We know they're going to be relentless about the story or the joke or the perspective. And that trust is so important. And yeah, sometimes people screw it up and yeah, you don't always get it right, but we trust the people here and we know that we have the people with the right DNA to go make something happen.
Which is really cool, which leads me kind of to the last issue of leadership, mindset, et cetera, is trusting your own frequency. And, you know, not to get more on the woo-woo side, which would drive Poynter crazy when I get to my Buddhist. He likes the ferocious side of Dave Meltzer, but the Buddhist side drives him nuts.
Okay.
But you got, it is a frequency, right? And, you know, I've been, and I won't throw any other networks down the bus, but like people that work for other networks, like, well, they care more about the set than they do me.
Yeah.
Or they don't allow me to share what I really think. And, you know, it's such a scarce type of an energy where the frequency that you've created has really a strong sense to it, and it allows to speak to your spectrum. You're not worried about people that aren't in the spectrum that are going to be, for example, someone that's scarce and has a need to be offended. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not interested in attracting them, although it's kind of the Howard Stern anomaly where they're more attracted to you, you know, which is where you get like a Roger Goodell. That guy's worth millions of dollars to you because he doesn't get frequency. Right. He's like the guy who hates Howard Stern that made Howard Stern so famous. Right. I wish I could get Goodell to hate me as much as he hates the other Dave. It would be great for my brand. Anyway, can you consciously create that frequency, or what are some of the things that you do to encourage people for what is overtermed authenticity? I just call it your frequency.
I think that if you're true to yourself, I think people aren't conduits of energy, which is what I think about. Like, people don't carry energy if they're afraid, if they are uncertain and insecure, and if they are looking to hide. I think in big companies in general, big organizations, you find a higher proportion of that kind of DNA. I actually really like about the military that there's such accountability and there's such a mission that there's like it's probably a disproportionately small amount of people like that. Same with Barstool. Like, everyone is exposed at Barstool Sports. Everyone. When you come to Barstool Sports, you're probably going to get criticized. I almost swore, but I didn't because I'm making it here without swearing. But you probably got attacked for coming here. You've probably been attacked during your time that you were here. And I think having a clear sense of purpose and mission, having a clear enemy or a clear opponent, and also having a place and a culture, or for us anyways, a place where like there's only one option, which is like call it like it is and be who you are in it. I think that is what helps create that frequency or that kind of just vibe.
Right on. I love you because you're probably the only person I know on earth that can draw a reasonable, credible analogy towards the military and Barstool Sports to compare those two.
We're a little bit military-esque.
I love that. I'm bringing uniforms. I'm bringing uniforms for everybody next time I come visit.
We're pretty regimented. Ty, do you want me to introduce them?
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably the perfect segue to get Zero Blog 30 going. Welcome to the party, guys.
Okay, so I think I get to do the honor. So we have three phenomenally talented people. They are the hosts of Zero Blog 30. So we have Chaps, who is, people can see Chaps. Chaps has the best background, bar none. And I'll let these guys introduce themselves a little bit more. But we have Chaps, Kate, and Captain Cons. They host the top military podcast, I think, in the world. And what I love about them is that they came up with this idea on their own. It kind of grew steam over time. They talk about what it's like to be in the military. They talk about what it's like to be a vet. They talk about the hardship and the victory and being part of something and the transition from duty life or active duty to civilian life. They make fun of traditions and kind of nuances of the military, and they create a great transition between, you know, what a normal 20, or not a normal, but what a civilian 20-something is thinking and a 20-something in the Marines or in the Air Force or in the Army is thinking and doing. And they've done a ton for, this is the group at Barstool who has done more for other people than most any group at Barstool. So the amount of money they raise, the amount of awareness they've created, the amount of support that they give to veterans, I think is like one of the most honorable things that we do, period. So that's a very long intro, but this is Zero Blog 30.
Hey everyone, thank you
Hi.
So much for having us. I'm Chaps. Whenever we started ZBT, we kind of wanted it to view as like a modern day VFW, where a lot of times now veterans, when they get out or people who are still in, they don't go to the VFW as much, but they have there. We have social media, we have online. So we kind of viewed, whenever we started it, the conversations that we would have, just like you would be in a platoon room, that you would be hanging out with your buddies, talking about current events, talking about random stuff, talking about your weekend. And that's kind of what we do. And like Erica alluded to, we do have this reputation of raising money for different types of charities or organizations and things like that. But I view most of our job as 95% of it is to make folks laugh when they turn in. I want them to be laughing. So then the 95% really affects the 5% where we're giving our serious ideas, our serious topics, our serious passions. And without the 95% that made them laugh, the 5%, people wouldn't care about it. Like, people care about the 5% that we ask them to get involved with mental health awareness, depression, anxiety, and veterans and non-veterans. They care about that stuff because they trust us, because they laugh with us twice a week or three times a week, whatever it may be. That's kind of how ZBT operates. We operate under the guise of humor, just for that little bit of sprinkling of real life humanity.
Yeah, but Chaps, you know, you say humor, but I think it's also a certain level of honesty too, because I think so often in the military, and especially civilians' view of the military, is it's very buttoned up, it's very disciplined, when in reality, the individuals in the military are sometimes these huge personalities and people who don't necessarily want to follow the rules. And we give everybody a look inside to what maybe the military is really like, and not necessarily what you see in the movies or what you read in your history books.
Yeah, I love that too. It's not all, I think people see the commercials and the billboards with these perfect, it's like robots. Everyone's the same. Everyone
is like
this.
Me. Yeah.
They all look like Chaps many years ago now. No offense, pal. But they, you know, they're all these buttoned up people that probably seem very vanilla, very like one tone to everyone. When actually, like Cons was saying, it's such a wide array of people, and they're left, they're right, they're up, they're down, they're from every state they're from. And different ranks and everything. And it's just like, you don't have to be a cookie cutter to be in the military. And I'm so glad that Chaps does a great job of finding different guests to get on all the time, whether they be officer or enlisted, and all sorts of different jobs. It's not all infantry. It's not all badass fighting. Sometimes it's a lot of twiddling your thumbs and doing logistics or waiting to turn in gear. And we talk to those people too. So it kind of gives a very real feel. We're not trying to sugarcoat what it is at all. But we also do love it. So it's a cool mix.
And I think what Erica said about the culture of Barstool is what makes our show successful, and what makes us successful as a whole, is that we're not scared of doing something that might offend somebody. We're not scared of having a take that might be different than a lot of the people in the military. We're not afraid of taking, like, if a general says something that's out of line or that we don't agree with, we're not afraid to go after it because we know that Erica and Dave have our back. They trust us to build the content that we think is good. And if that's what we're doing, then they're happy with it. Mm-hmm. I think in a modern day of media, that's so rare to not be scared of the things that you publish, because a lot of times there is a lot of backlash. And as long as you're doing it as a basic, decent human being, then we're good. And you can't ask for anything more as a content creator. I've been at Barstool for almost 4 years and have never, ever been told you're going to cover this topic about anything, or you're going to have this feeling about this in any way. 4 years, never had an editor say, you're going to write this, this is a blog for you, or anything. Never. And that's unheard of.
Right. And you talk about chain of command. It's kind of funny. Part of the reason I think that we're so quick to voice our opinions is we don't have to answer to that chain of command in the military anymore.
We're and free.
And conversely, our chain of command, our Barstool chain of command, is so supportive, as you mentioned. So that really gives us the ammunition that we need to speak freely and to voice opinions that honestly can sometimes be controversial, because we're not just completely pro-military. Everything that the military comes out and says or does, we don't just fall in line and say,
We are pro-military.
Oh, we're pro-military. Excuse me. Let me.
We are bootlickers.
No, we're not bootlickers. But what I mean is, just because the news comes out, we don't support every decision. We're able to voice our opinions now, having been in the military and left the military. I think we have a unique perspective that allows us to come at them a little differently.
One of the favorite messages that I get, because all three of us get a lot of messages, personal DMs from all sorts of different military, but my favorites are either friends of someone who's in the military or a spouse of someone in the military or an aunt or an uncle saying, my nephew or my niece is serving and I was having trouble connecting with them and kind of understanding it. And listening to your guys is like super honest, because it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but there's funny, there's hard, there's... And listening to us has helped them better connect with the people who are serving. And I love that. I love the messages we get from active duty and from veterans too, but that is really important to me, because one of Chaps's goals, he was the one who really, this was his brainchild from the start, was that it's not just for military. This is a military podcast for everyone. And I think he's done a really awesome job at curating the perfect content to make it that way and to break it down so anyone can understand it. Because the military too, there's a lot of jargon and it's very acronym heavy, and we have our own language, we have our own laws, we have our own everything. So I think he's done a really good job at helping everybody navigate that in a really easy to consume way.
Yeah, I think that that's really important to have that, strip it down and you don't have any of the acronyms and you just make it for the everyday person. I think that's really important. And a thing that really makes ZBT special is that we don't just go over current events. We go through life struggles. Like if I'm struggling with depression or anxiety, I talk to my listeners about that. I talk to these two about it, about what I'm going through, finding a new psychiatrist or psychologist and how that process is, the struggles that I'm dealing with the VA. They know the inner workings of our struggles. So that makes us real people to them, because we aren't hiding anything. We're out there in the open. Our struggles, our flaws, the warts on us are out there in the open. And that allows people to really kind of love who we are, warts and all.
Yeah. And yeah. I think one of the things that I'm so proud of so often, even today in 2020, dealing with mental illness or struggling with any sort of depression or anxiety in the military is really not the easiest thing to get out and tell your chain of command about. You're afraid of what might happen or how you might be viewed. And we've been given this platform that we can now say, listen, it's okay if you're feeling one of these feelings, and it's okay to get help. And if you're too afraid, you're still in the military and you're too afraid to speak to someone, speak to us. We'll help facilitate that conversation, or we'll put you in touch with professionals who can help you. So the fact that we've been given such a great platform to really champion the, mental health is very important to take care of, is very, very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. We're pretty great, I guess, huh, guys?
Yeah, we're pretty awesome.
I think the only other thing I'll say is that we were talking about the nature of Barstool being very, so I took a long time ago, I took improv classes, and you're making it up as you go. And the biggest killer of creativity in improv is no. That just ends the story right there. You can't go any further. And so many different places I've worked, it's you have this wild idea. It's no. Mm-hmm. Barstool is the first place I ever worked where no is uncommon. You're like, what? That never, I don't think I've been told no on a single idea I've ever had. It's always yes. And no matter how weird and wacky it is, they do trust you to, okay, I trust to figure it out. And so with Zero Block 30, that's given us the chance to be more than a podcast. Hey, we want to go down to DC and take over Capitol Hill. And so we're going door to door to congressmen and women's doors, like Zero Block 30. And Barstool's like, yeah, go to town, go ahead. We want to go down to Rough and Rowdy, a boxing match outside Fort Bragg. Let us go and be the ones who go and talk to all the crazy fans and all the good stuff like that. Yeah, go ahead. We've been all around the country and we got to go get attacked on camera by the dogs, the military working dogs, and surfing with wounded veterans out in California, and David Vibora's adapted training facility in Texas. Barstool gives us the means to be able to go above and beyond the podcast, and whatever idea we have to connect with veterans and the community, we can do it, which is, again, like, that doesn't happen anywhere. And I think you're talking about, not to hate on ESPN, but I feel like that's part of the result of being afraid of a lot of things, being afraid to, we don't want to hurt anybody, so we don't want to go too far, and it being more of a no culture creatively than yes. And I think that's what truly gives Barstool the edge, is that it is so yes heavy.
And guys, I think what's really interesting about Zero Block 30, from my perspective, it's that raw, unfiltered, direct access where those of us who are on active duty still, we're used to seeing and doing things a certain kind of way. And you guys speak our language, and you speak in our language on your podcast, which is great. But on the flip side of that, you've also made that jump, made a transition into an awesome place like Barstool Sports. And you've been given the latitude to be creative and to make it work, right? So Semper Gumby, and flexibility is the key to air power. You guys are living, breathing examples of that. And it's great to see that the process works, right? You're told to leverage your experience and then know how to translate that to carry your skills over as a civilian. And I love the way you guys do it. So thank you for doing it. It's phenomenal stuff.
Yeah. And I'll be the first one to admit that doing something like ZBT was not my interest when I first started at Barstool. Dave didn't even know that I was a Marine or any of that stuff whenever he hired me. I wanted to do sports satire stuff because that's what I was kind of known for. But when part of my take is on the roster, it's kind of already taken. Like, you have to be smart enough to realize that you're not that, do something else. And so this was my next wheelhouse, like the Marine Corps stuff, the military stuff in general. So we went and what I think is the best military podcast in the world.
Yeah, and it's funny, Ty, that you say that, because I think what's cool too is that we get to say what I think a lot of people who are still active duty are thinking, but can't actually voice. So we get to just speak.
Like firing Captain Crozier is stupid.
Yeah, like we get to be unapologetic. And, you know, I think we're reverent to an extent. But we found that balance and it worked for us.
I think it's great to understand too that it's life, right? There's millions of different perspectives, and and you know, we should embrace people who have a different one than ours. And you know, there's great content that you guys are producing, and you're putting it out. Everyone gets to listen to it from the lens that they have to hear it from, and you take what you like, and if you hear something that you don't, you know, tune into the next one, right? But it's great to hear. You can hear the creativity that you guys have when I listen in on that podcast. And I personally enjoy it. And I like the fact that a lot of us get wrapped in the active duty military stuff, but there's this whole other section of our lives that happens when we hang the uniform up at the end of the day. And then there's this whole other section of our lives that happens when we hang the uniform up at the end of our career. And you guys do a great job of showcasing both of those. So thank you again very much for that.
Thank you. Thanks.
So now, I mean, I think it's a great time to say thank you, of course, to Zero Blog 30. The dialogue was incredible. Again, I love hearing from you. I love tuning into your podcast, and the entire Barstool Sports website is, if you want to kill an entire month of a rabbit hole right there, that's a great place to do it. It's so much fun to get in there. So thank you very much. And then I'd love to bring Erica and David back on, and then maybe start going through some of these questions and get some awesome answers from everybody.
Cool.
So if you want me to get it started off, I can. The first question here comes from Gigi. How do you build credibility other than consistency, authenticity, and honesty? And Dave, that sounds like the perfect question for you.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good place to start with honesty. And I think a lot of people are too afraid to tell people, one, how they feel, two, what they think, and three, the mistakes that they've made. I actually give a dummy tax award at my company because I think that's where companies are made, by the mistakes. And when people hide the mistakes, you tend to make them again and again and again, and then you find out really big things are happening. And so I encourage people to test the limits with the credibility of basically having vulnerability, which I believe creates invulnerability. And I speak from authority because I was, I'm not going to swear, I was full of it for half of my career. I was always telling people what they wanted to hear, manipulating, lying, cheating, overselling, and back-end selling to get things done. And it didn't work. And my credibility actually came by telling people, hey, I'm probably one of the biggest idiots that you know. I've lost tons of money, but here's what I've learned. And when I started telling people what I've learned from my mistakes, that's when the credibility came forward. And people respected me far more for losing more money than they have, than they ever did for making more money than they had. And I think when you learn to be honest about the successes and failures, but most importantly, the lessons, you'll have credibility. Credibility, by the way, Ty, I just want to tell you, it's the most underrated thing in sales. So I know beyond belief that people, they focus on features and benefits and quantitative analysis, and people bound emotion for logical reasons. But if you're 100% credible, everybody will do what you say, right? I mean, I strived for that potential, but the closer you are to 100% credible, the more influential you are and the less work you have to do. If I was 100% credible, I'd even get Erica to pay $250,000 to come on here with me. For charity.
Yeah, right. Well, I think so. That's obviously a great question teed up for David. But Erica, I'd love to hear your perspective on that too, because, you know, from what we heard from your ZBT team, I mean, it sounds like you've given them opportunities to do things that they thought were great. And that a lot of honesty, credibility, and authenticity probably came into that. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I agree. I thought David nailed it. You know, I think Kate said it well, which is we're just a yes place. Like, let's try it. Like the worst thing that can happen is you can fail, right? And everybody fails and everybody falls down and everybody messes up. Like, that's a given. So once you stop being afraid of that and you're like, okay, I'm going to go see what I can do next. I'm going to see if I can go a little farther or do something a little bit bigger. That's kind of, you know, that's the name of the game. And, you know, I think you hire really good people or you surround yourself with people who are of high caliber, and that you have a sense about. And to what you guys are saying, those people are honest, they're authentic, they're real, they're credible, they're hardworking, they're committed. You may not always agree, like you may not be from the same place or, you know, have any shared sense of background, but you can create, you know, if you hire people or you surround yourself with people who are open to creating something together and you're not afraid of failing along a path, then anything can happen. Like we, you know, Dave and I joke about like our first year together at Barstool, first 2 years, like if you were a negative person, you would have said we failed that entire time. We did nothing but fail those first years. If you were a critical person, you would say Dave did nothing but fail for years before that. But the reality is we were winning. We were just winning through failing a lot because we were trying all sorts of things all the time. And if we hadn't tried all those things, I think things would have been different. So that's just kind of how I look at it.
I can tell you this. I don't see a lot of failure. You guys literally have thousands of people tuning in to watch David Portnoy open boxes that people sent to him, which that's unbelievable. And that's also a great segue to our next anonymous question here. So this is for everybody too. So Barstool, David Meltzer and ZBT always have new interesting content. How do you consistently stay interesting? It's a good one.
That is a good one. I think part of it is you know, at least for us on our show, every week we are scouring the news, but not just the news, we're scouring all sorts of military social media too. So we don't just know, like, here's what Russia's doing this week. We also know that PFC Schmuckatelli at Camp Lejeune got in big trouble for having, like, a cockroach farm in his room or something weird. Like, we also have, like, I don't know, we keep our ear to the ground to get, like, this down low scuttlebutt as well as to just the news. We look at, I think it's looking at unique sources and looking at them from a unique point of view, and just not just relying on the usual go-tos, but, like, where else can I get information from that's outside the box a little bit? And I think that's helped us tremendously. And not being afraid to ask, like, sometimes at the end of an episode, we'll say, hey, and anybody listening, if you got any juicy gossip going on your base, hit us up. You know, never anything nefarious, but still, like.
Oh, sometimes nefarious.
Yeah, nefarious puts people, puts asses in the seats, as they say.
Yeah.
I think one of the successful things that about Barstool as a whole is that your entire life as a creative person, having a brain like a lot of the content creators at Barstool, you're kind of told to draw it in some. Like, you're told, like, your weirdness is bad. Like, you need to draw some of that stuff in. Here, it's like, oh, no. Go do that weird thing. Yeah. Do it a little bit weirder, and you're going to have a hit on your hands. And that's kind of where our creativity really thrives, is at the spot where most people are scared to do it, where we know we're not going to have backlash for it, and our fans are going to love it. Like, the stoolies are going to be all in on it. If the weirder we write, the more strange we get, the more dynamic that our opinion could be, that's what they want to see.
But what's crazy, when you talk about being weird and you think, oh, maybe I'm the only person on this planet who has this viewpoint or has this idea, and then you put it out there and you see the feedback of so many people who are like, I was thinking the exact same thing. So it's just that lack of fear of putting things out there.
65,000 people answered yes on a poll that they would also like a cologne that smells like new beach balls. So I think that doesn't make me strange.
Yeah, you're not alone.
I think it's awesome that the highest energy that you three have is when we talk about being weird. I think you guys nailed it, that people want you to be more interested than interesting. Mm-hmm. Right? And what you're talking about is you guys are really interested. And so you find out really cool shit, and then I swore again. But anyway, you find out really cool stuff, and you share that. You share that with people. And I think people that have that perspective, you know, for me, I'm really interested in human nature. And I, you know, not quite as weird as, can be, not quite as fun as some of the stuff at Barstool, but human nature moves people. And if you can help give them insight from, you know, I do hours of research every day being interested. And then during the day, I really am very selfish with these types of opportunities because all I'm doing is learning, you know, as much as I can share. I mostly am sitting here for an hour just taking notes on what genius stuff you guys have to say so I can pick up on it and get better myself. So be more interested than interesting is a secret.
And I think that yes culture that you guys have at Barstool is important too, because again, it's the unboxing happened by accident, right? Mm-hmm. David accidentally showed his address and people started sending him things, and it was, hey, I got this idea, let's try it out. Or Erica convincing me to go running in the rain at 10 p.m. without ever saying a word to me through her Nardini Run Club, right? Like those, awesome. It's interesting, right? And I'm interested. So it's a great point from David. We got a lot of questions rolling in here too. This is great. Thanks everyone for sending these in. A great question from our friend John Safran. If you're starting your own business, what's the best way to expose your brand to the widest audience possible? I think you can attack that from a bunch of different angles, but great question.
Send it attached to a baby chicken's neck.
Okay.
I would say the first thing is you have to have a great product. Like that's the biggest thing to grow a brand, is you have to have a product that people want, that isn't theoretical, that people actually can like get value from. You make people's lives better. You help them escape. We help people escape. That's our product. And then I think the second big thing is like the world has changed in that like anyone can build a brand right now. Like anyone can build a brand. Truly anyone can build a brand. And that's so exciting. Like that's this like revolution in the world of like you can use Instagram or Twitter or TikTok or social platforms which aren't even harnessed yet to tell your story and to tell the story of your brand and your company. I think you have to be very consistent. I think you have to be a student of it, to what David is saying. I think you have to get people people's attention, like ZBT was mentioning, like whether it's a chicken, you put it on a chicken's neck or something sensational. But I think the biggest thing is to have a product that you believe in and have a work ethic and a commitment to promote and share that product in a way that feels true to you. And if it's true to you, then other people will think it's true too.
I think that, you know, there's three things. There's a strength of your signal that builds a brand, and that comes from quality content and consistency. I think anyone in marketing that's been there a long time know that we give people too much credit for remembering or being aware of things. So you have to be consistent. You never, especially with 4.2 billion people reachable by anybody, you have to be consistent. But the strength of the signal comes from the quality. And just like the ZBT people here, right? It's just such quality content. It builds a need. The second thing is know your spectrum. Right. Barstool is extremely good at this. They know their audience. And, you know, in traditional marketing, since I'm the oldest one here, we used to talk about know the pool, have a hook, and have an ask, right? You don't go shopping and, you know, swimming in that wrong pool, but know your hook and know your ask. And so that's the spectrum that Barstool is exceptional at. And then the last one comes from practice. I think people don't practice the clarity of their brand. And Erica mentioned it the first year, what they were doing wasn't making mistakes. They were practicing what their brand was. And so you go through all these things and you're like, oh, that one little word makes a huge, huge difference. Or this one little place of switching a brand. I'll use Ugg boots, for example. Brian Smith, the CEO, is a dear friend of mine. And that thing was about to crash and burn. And then instead of gearing it towards surfers, he geared it towards the people sitting on the beach watching the surfers. Like one little nuance. So he was making all these mistakes. And the next thing he knows, he has a worldwide brand that Oprah is telling you it's the, you know, best gift for Christmas. Those are the differences. So the strength of your signal, the spectrum of your signal, the pool, the ask there. And then two, the clarity of your message through practice.
I totally agree with that. I did an interview with a really interesting woman named Karen Kahn, who I used to work with at AOL, and she's now created this organization called I Fund Women, which is basically helping women launch startups. I was asking her, like, what's the number one inhibitor of success? And she said, it's the pitch. Like, you have to know the story. You have to understand the listener. You have to understand the value proposition. Like, who are you? Why are you here? What do you have for me? Why should I care? So totally to that point, David, like understanding the story and the value prop, super important.
Awesome question. So a lot more questions are rolling in. So David, this is great. I've been to your Friday trainings. Why do you do them?
Well, I've been doing over 20 years and it's a lot cheaper to do them now because I don't got to buy people lunch. But you know, it really for me is this idea of changing the world. I think that the mind articulates really big thoughts as well as fear. And a lot of times we don't think big enough. And so when I came up with an idea to empower over a billion people simply to be happy, and I started literally 20 years ago formulating all types of different disciplines in order to create happiness. And then through the practice of trainings, now thousands and thousands of people register and come to these trainings. What my math is if I can get 1,000 people over these next 20 years that are going to my trainings for free every Friday, and they're learning how to empower 1,000 people to empower 1,000 people, that I can empower over a billion people in my lifetime to be happy. Just some simple middle-aged mutant turtle like myself can have such a significant difference in the world, one person at a time. Started one training. My first training had two people at Lee Steinberg's office in Newport Beach. Two agents came for lunch, and now we have thousands of people. But it takes time, right? You know, it's not just empowering people to be happy. It's two layers of that. So I created this training and will continue to do it through, as long as I can talk, the internet will make it easier and easier. So that's why I created it. And hopefully I'll create a collective consciousness of happiness.
So I love that question and the answer because it ties right back to the last one about building your brand and staying consistent. And for those of you that follow David, that's the David Meltzer brand right there. He just explained it to you. This is a great question for everyone, especially ZBT. This comes from Anthony Aldemare. I'm in the process of transitioning from active duty service and don't necessarily fit your typical corporate employee mold. How do I find a team like yours to be on? In general, I suppose.
I think a lot of that is luck. I mean, I think that you have to get lucky to be at a spot like Barstool. I think everybody would love to work in a company, but I think that's what makes the employees here feel so special, is that we know that we did in some way luck along the way. Kate was working at in concessions in Philadelphia. I was going to school and podcasting into a shoebox before some person without an avatar on Twitter tagged Dave Portnoy in a tweet and said that I was funny. He happened to have time at the airport to listen to my podcast and then offered me a full-time job just based off of that. It had nothing to do with the connections I was making on LinkedIn or anything like that. It was a lot of luck, but when that luck does strike, you have to be ready to pounce and take your opportunities and go for it full bore. And I think that's what a lot of people in the military really have in their corner, is that they're ready to attack. Like, if you have to attack a plan and attack it aggressively and say, we are going to accomplish this goal, if you open the door just a little bit, I'm coming through and I'm bringing my two co-hosts with me.
Yeah. And I think what Erica said earlier about nailing the pitch, you have to really know who you are, know what's your worth, what are your qualities. And if you can go shop that efficiently to various companies, eventually, I agree with Chaps that there is a certain amount of luck that you need in this world to land something great. But I think you can also get it through just good old fashioned grind, and you might get to some companies that aren't necessarily a great fit, and it's okay that you get to a company that's not a great fit. And then you can go find someone else that is that better fit. But initially, you need to build your own brand, know what your good qualities are, and how are you going to sell yourself to a company and tell them why you are going to make them better as a company and why you're a good person to have on their team.
I think just to, as they say in the military, let me caveat on that real quick. It would behoove you that some keywords are, but I think for me, I was so lost when I got out. I had absolutely no idea what the heck I was doing. I would definitely use your GI Bill, even if you hate school or whatever, definitely utilize that. And if you already have a degree, I found that, no, I didn't land my dream job right away. I didn't land any sort of jobs for many years after I first got out. But while I was doing those jobs, I still had hobbies that I loved on the side. I loved comedy. I loved art. I loved writing. So in my spare time is when I really focused on getting into those communities and befriending people, and not necessarily, I wouldn't say it was straight up networking, but okay, I know I'm interested in getting to this group. Let me volunteer at this place on the weekends. Who knows who I'll meet and what it will lead me to. And I've found that every truly good opportunity that I've gotten has been from extra efforts that I was putting in on the side. I volunteered when I first got out of the military here in New York City through a program called The Mission Continues. And that's what Jon Stewart at The Daily Show, he reached out to them to say, hey, is anybody in the group interested in media? Bring them over. So it was through volunteerism and networking with people there that they knew I was interested in it. It linked me there. And it was a bumpy road, but sticking with the things I loved, even though I was doing a job in the meantime that I didn't, finally did lead to something. So even if you don't wind up exactly where you thought you were, you're going to wind up somewhere good that you like, as long as you just keep working towards the things that you love, even if it has to be on the side sometimes.
And I think Kate's example is a great one, because I think so often the military, when they transition, are pigeonholed into certain types of careers. Like, oh, you were, you know, a leader, so you're going to be a great leader of an Amazon warehouse. And if you allow yourself to get pigeonholed into these jobs that have been designed, you know, for military, then you probably end up doing something that you don't necessarily love. Not to say that there's anything wrong with those jobs that have been carved out for veterans, but just because those are there doesn't mean you can't go do something completely different, like Kate working at Barstool Sports.
I think the only other thing I would say, I've had this experience a couple of times. One is, I think, like, luckily life is long. Like, everybody has shitty jobs that they hate. Like, everybody does. Like, and just because you have a bad job now doesn't mean you're going to have a bad job ever. And
Erica cussed, by the way.
No. I don't think anybody noticed. But just because you have a job that you don't like right now doesn't mean that that job is forever. And really good things can come out of bad jobs, like really, really good things. Even if it's just learning what you don't want and who you don't want to work for, or things you don't like to do, that's a good thing because it crosses off something. I think the other thing that's hard on the military side is people sometimes are like, I'm a great leader. Like, I led a platoon. I led this. I'm a leader. I'm a leader. Nobody has a fuck now we're swearing.
Yeah. Two to two.
Nobody gives a fuck that you're a leader, right? In the business world, you have to have the hands-on experience. So I think sometimes you have to have some humility of like, all right, like, you know you're going to work harder than everyone else. You know you have a stamina that no one else has. You know you have a self-reliance and a resiliency that is unparalleled, but you got to start back at the beginning a little bit. And not in a way that you should feel insulted by or dismissed, but like, it's just sometimes the name of the game. Like, I find that very common with two types of kids. One is MBA, people who have just gotten their MBAs, and people who come out of the military, of there is this expectation of where you're going to come in. And in an MBA, it's a hierarchy. It's very regimented. You're in a program. In the military, there's hierarchy. It's very regimented. You're in the program. There's controls. In the business world, there are no controls. So I think just having the humility to be like, okay, fine. Like, I'm going to take a step back in terms of title or pay or what I think I'm owed or deserve to show how great I am. I think those are the people who ultimately end up the happiest.
Yeah, I always tell military folks whenever they're getting out, let your military experience and your work ethic that you learned in the military shine through and not the last position that you held. Because if you're looking for that same last position, you're just not going to find it. You need to have the work ethic to attack it and to get it again, but you can't go in and expect to be a manager of 300 people when you have really no experience in the same realm.
And I think it's not just true. Oh, sorry, David, do you want to go?
No, go ahead. Go finish. I'll finish.
I think it's not just true in the military. Like, I was the CMO of AOL. I was making a lot of money. I was miserable. I hated it. I left. I think I worked for a third of my salary. I had a crap job. There was a huge amount of uncertainty. I didn't love it. I learned a lot from it. I would never be here now if I hadn't jumped off the cliff to go to the, everyone thought I was stupid. I was taking a step back. It was uncertain. There was a lot of reasons it was not the safe call. But I would not be here if I had not done that. I learned so much in that process. I got skills that I otherwise didn't have. And I was able to take all those things from those other roles. And that's why I got to Barstool. So I think even jumps backward can really help you spring forward.
And Ty, I just want to add real quick, like, I've formulated math to what they're talking about. This luck is simply what you pay attention to and give your intention to. So attention plus intention. Kate, your story, Chaps, you as well. It's not luck, right? It's you're paying attention to something, volunteering, doing all these things. You gave it your intention, whether it was after work, before work, or during work, and that equals the coincidences that occur in your life. And so people that do that are the ones that we call lucky, but a lot of people will laugh at you, scoff at you, make fun of you, and then they'll all be jealous and applaud you like they do now.
Yeah, I think this is a topic that this could be the next webinar. I'd love to have you guys back to just kind of focus on this one. You know, a CEO, a co-founder, entrepreneur.
Up another 250.
But I think some common themes that I heard both of those, everyone's responses really, is being willing to put yourself out there a little bit, especially for Chaps. If you weren't willing to kind of throw your podcast out there for someone to hear, someone liked what they heard and tagged someone, and that led to where you are now. But being willing to put yourself out there. And then to borrow another Dave Meltzerism, find someone who's in a position you want to be in and ask for help. So it's really important to Erica's point for us to take it upon ourselves to translate our value proposition and what we want to be for people who may have never been in the military before. So if you don't want to take a step back and kind of career level and navigate from that perspective, we have to be able to explain where we can come in better than just saying, like, hey, I'm a leader. I ran a a squadron of this many or a platoon of that many or something like that. But so we're at 5 o'clock. There's a great question that came in. This is Mental Health Awareness Month. I'd love to do this one and then kind of wrap up here. So sorry we couldn't get to everybody's questions, but this is a great one. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. So how can we remain resilient in, we'll say, a toxic work environment, to keep doing the best you can do, even though you don't agree with maybe the current structure in the organization? I think it'd be great to hear a CEO's perspective on that one too.
I think, I'm sorry. I think it's horrible to be, there's a lot of things that make environments toxic, but it doesn't really change how that feels, and that can feel really bad. What I would do is, or at least what I've done. If I'm very miserable, and I've been miserable and I've worked in toxic places, I always put a note in my calendar 3 months out from today. And the reason I always did that was I'm like, I don't know if I'm just in a mood or I'm in a bad place or this is a weird time or something's going on with the manager or the company or the sector or whatever. And I feel like 3 months, a quarter, is enough time to get some perspective. And it's enough time to try to make a change and to do every single thing you can do in your power to change what you don't like about your environment. I think at the 3 month mark, what I always did was I was like, okay, how am I feeling? Like, do I like it? Is it better? Is it worse? Has it changed at all? Is it me? Is it the place? What is it? And that point, I think the worst feeling to have is a feeling of helplessness where you can't make things better for yourself. So at that point in time, I always am like, all right, like things have either worked out and I feel great and I, you know, empowered myself or I helped change the situation or the situation changed for me or for anyone. Or what is it that you can do to go create a new situation? And I think you have to work, you know, changing a situation is a job. So it's not like I'm going to put my resume together and call a couple people and post my stuff on LinkedIn. Like that's not good enough. If you really want to change, you really have to put your heart into it and to really put effort against it. But my biggest thing is like draw a line in the sand of like, this is toxic. I want out. I'm going to do everything I can to make it work. Maybe it's 1 month. Maybe it's 5 months, like whatever the time parameter works for you. But give it, you know, be sure you can look at yourself and exhaust the question of like, did you do your all to make that situation better? And if you did, and it's time to go, then it's time to go. Like, so that's my advice, Ty.
If that doesn't work, try tequila.
That's right.
Also a good strategy.
Or Pink Whitney.
Mine's middle of the road. It's a combination of those two, right? It's understanding. I think to prove out Erica's model, just try your best for 3 months to understand what's going on. I think a lot of times we only see the negative and then it starts growing on itself. It's like driving a race car and staring at the wall and you keep hitting the wall and you don't know why because you keep staring at the wall. If anyone's been married here, if you look for bad stuff in your wife, that's all you're going to see is the bad stuff in her. And when you look for the good stuff, that's what I see. And it's changed my whole marriage. So trying to look for that understanding and pray for happiness and look for that light and love. But after 3 months, if you can't find any, then run away and pray for their happiness.
So I want to put a little bit of military perspective on that one, just in case that came from a military guest. So I would say the big thing there is to be purposeful with all the actions that you're going to take. And what I always recommend to people is seek first to understand, right? So if you feel like your environment is toxic, take some steps to understand if it really is. Get other people's opinions. Ask some questions. Feedback is really important in the military, and request feedback, good, honest feedback. Utilize your chain of command, of course, but try to find out why things are the way they are. That's going to help you do a couple of things. Number one, eventually this could lead to utilizing resources that we have at our disposal to try to remedy things like a toxic work environment. And if you take those purposeful steps, you're going to have the data to back the feeling that you have. We have a saying in my office, don't bring feelings to a fact fight. You always want to make sure that you take some time and gather those facts first. And don't be afraid to use resources if you feel like the environment is toxic. So we know what those are in the various different services. We have those at our disposal. Find a friend, talk things out. But the biggest key that I have, because sometimes we don't have full control over our environment, is you're going to find what you're looking for. So stop focusing on the negative things and try to focus on the positive things first. I promise you, if you focus on positivity, you will find it before you see the negativity. That might not change everything, but if you kind of take all those things that I just mentioned, you might find your environment to be just a little bit more manageable.
Yeah, Ty, I had a coach one time. He always used to preach PMA, positive mental attitude. And your attitude is something that you have control over. Certainly there are outside factors that can affect your attitude. But if you make a conscious decision to have a positive mental attitude, I think that can carry you through just about any situation you'll encounter, whether it's in work, private life, anything.
Yeah, so that was an anonymous question. So whoever that was, if you hear me right now, reach out to me and let's see if we can fix it if it's military. So we're over our time, but I thought that was really, really key to hit that. Again, Mental Awareness Month. There's some amazing people out there that are dealing with some pretty extraordinary things. So reach out and ask for help. That's a big thing. But thank you, everyone, for joining today.
Hey, podcast listeners. Thank you for listening, as always, to today's episode. I know you've been enjoying the Road to Revenue episodes. They are downloading at record paces, and I am so grateful for you joining me, not only on the podcast, but live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you email me at david@dmeltzer.com or text me at 949-298-2905. Thank you so much.